Hey everybody, we're back with another commission podcast. This one was sent in by Sean Ray, and it is It Follows, the 2004 horror film, supernatural psychological horror film, written and directed by David Robert Mitchell, and it stars a bunch of teenagers you've never heard of, but who are plucky and engaging, and I thought did a pretty good job. I really enjoyed this. This is one of the spotlight films Cecily and I did on our first annual Halloween Spooktacular, Cinematic Spooktacular, recorded last October. This is the first time I believe you've seen the film, Jim.
Yep.
You're a horror fan. What did you think?
I thought it was really good. One of the best horror films I've seen in a very long time. And that includes the Insidious movies. That includes... What's the other one that starts with a C?
The Conjuring.
All of those. I thought this was better than any of them.
Oh, wow.
Not maybe as scary as any of them,
okay,
but better because it encompassed a broader topic than just I'm going to scare you.
Yeah, and it's a fresh idea.
Yeah,
like a very simple concept that is I think sturdy. I want to, I guess that's a pretty strong pitch if you want to have a no spoiler movie review.
You guys can turn it off here and watch it. Yeah,
yeah, because that's the thing. Like, I don't want to do anything to prepare you for the conceit, because the conceit is the majority of this movie.
Well, I knew it going in, and I still was impressed by it.
Okay,
so, yeah.
I will say that there's a quote by Quentin Tarantino, who loved this film when it came out in 2014, and he says it's the kind of film that annoys you because it's so good and you want it to be perfect and it's not perfect.
Huh, okay.
And I will say that I think the film has some third act problems where it kind of loses a little bit of steam. But still, yeah, it's genuinely... And the first time I saw it late at night and close to Halloween with the lights off. And I found, like, the first two-thirds of the movie fairly gripping. Uh-huh. And especially for his low budget and just, you know, kind of purely conceptual the horror is. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, if that doesn't make you want to see the movie, I don't know what will. It's currently available on Netflix and every other streaming platform, though you might have to pay for it there. Not that you don't pay for Netflix.
We know.
So, yeah, there you go. From here on out, Spoiler City. Let's see if, because, like, Sean Ray sent us a lot of stuff. He also sent in a follow-up email saying, hey, don't feel like you have to read the whole Bible.
Okay.
But he has a lot of themes that he wants us to discuss. And I don't know, do you want to go through his themes, or do you want to just talk about this movie for a bit and then back clean up, or?
I'm curious what the themes he's going to point out are, because I've read a couple of reviews, and I think the most obvious of them is the least interesting of them.
Okay.
Which is essentially like equating it to an STD.
Yes.
I think it's like so on the face of the movie that it's almost silly to say that is the point of the movie.
Right. Right. I actually think that's an incorrect reading, because this thing, unless you think that... like you can get rid of AIDS or herpes or chlamydia or what have you
by passing it to someone else,
dodge that bullet. Now, and it's like it's just going to be a musical chair until the last baby born in the world is fucked.
Right.
Ooh, I don't last that, baby
yeah,
born.
Well,
I don't know. According to the movie The Book of Mormon, there are people who actually believe that is a cure for AIDS. So
that's true.
Don't want to suggest that. I thought that was like so surface level and so knee jerk. Mm-hmm. One of the themes he hit on is something that I definitely got. It's the metaphor for like sexual assault and like what it's
okay.
like to be a
yeah.
woman who's assaulted and have everyone close to you. Number one, you're scared that they're not going to believe you. You're scared that they're going to judge you and say what you did to deserve it.
Mm-hmm.
And like the trauma that inflicts, and the people that like use and take advantage of you in those situations. I think that's, if you're going to look for like a real life allegory, there's a lot more in the show to suggest that than there is to say that it's just a parable about STDs.
Yeah. And I think there's even another level, just generally the idea of, sex and procreation and death as mm-hmm. human beings,
right.
And what a sort of bizarre and terrifying prospect all of it is.
Right.
And how that's kind of entwined in this movie, I think intentionally, but who knows? We'll have to discuss it further.
Yeah, he's on the theme of that. He says, as the film works as a metaphor for psychological isolation and victim blaming and sexual assault. Mm-hmm. For example, the cops, when they're taking Jay's statement, the cop asks her whether the sex was consensual, and she nods. Mm-hmm. Which is weird, because saying that sex was consensual leaves off the whole part about being chloroformed and confined, yeah. And then
the abduction was not.
Yeah. And then and also if it was consensual, was it fully informed consensual? Like,
sure.
You know, yeah. If you have a immediately lethal and fatal disease that you could give a person and their only remedy is to give it to somebody else, like, not many people would consent to that procedure.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't consent to have sex with a woman that had a razor blade lined vagina. I would appreciate her letting me know that before I, you know, I'm saying, like, there's consent and there's consent. I thought sure. That's that aspect of it. The fact that, like, the cops seem to fixate on the consensual nature, and, you know, even later on in the movie where the friends are talking about Jay, mm-hmm. Behind her back, essentially, and they're like, well, something happened, but I don't think it's what she said. Like, there's a lot of meat to that kind of analysis. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, I thought that was an interesting point he made. Also, the other thing you wanted to talk about is the something that like I noticed about the movie is there is a certain kind of like a timeless quality about it. Like, the cars are all over the place, from classic cars to modern cars. People are swimming in pools in skimpy bathing suits, but the leaves are falling off the trees. There are still corded phones everywhere, but there's also these weird clamshell PDAs. Like, there's a lot of things that are kind of like our world, but in the, like, the dress and grooming, this other stuff was like made to be kind of like timeless. And he thought that is an indication for, a metaphor for like leaving childhood behind, the fact that you're kind of out of time. And he had a couple points, like, when Hugh and Jay are playing the trade game in a theater, Hugh trades places with the young boy because how cool would it be to have your whole life ahead of him? And he's dealing with the regrets he's had about decisions he's made. Mm-hmm. When Hugh gives Jay the curse by sleeping with her, she's suddenly thrown into a situation she has to deal with alone. She can't go to her mom for help. She's completely on her own with this problem. But every time she's confronted by it, she goes to a safe space from her childhood. The ice cream store Paul and Kelly work at, the neighborhood playground, Greg's vacation lake house, the community pool where she had her first kiss. Anytime adulthood, it appears, Jay and her friends retreat to a childhood safe haven to escape it.
Yeah, I guess I didn't have anything as concrete as that when I was in mind when I was saying it, but that's kind of what I was getting at with the idea, you know, that these people in adulthood now have to deal with this idea of sex, and their own mortality in a way too, because there's a lot of like poetry that what's her face is reading.
Yeah, it's like a bunch of T.S. Eliot stuff, I suppose.
Yeah, it's essentially about death, right? Life and death, and I think those, like, he kind of hits it on the head here when he's talking about, you know, her retreating to her childhood.
Right.
Every time she's confronted by the decision that she made about this sexual encounter, right?
Right, right. And also the whole idea that, like, you know, a lot of people flee from adult responsibilities. And even adults, mm-hmm. like, if you think of death as, like, the metaphoric responsibility that we all must take on, not nobody, but hardly anyone rushes forward to that responsibility and, like, yeah, sign me up. So,
sure.
I think, and also the fact that the final form that it took was of her father, I thought was
he the naked man standing on the stairs?
No, he's the guy at the pool. When Jay's like to said her sister, I don't want it to, cause like, there's a lot of hints in the film that Jay's dad either died or has abandoned them, and they don't actually say it. I think there's hints that, like, if you look at the pictures on her mom's mantle, there's this man. And
on her mirror, there's a man with a younger version of her.
And that's who manifests at the pool.
Yeah.
So, like, okay. These, like, you know, this like, manifestation of male adulthood coming to menace you is kind of interesting from that, like, you know, children fleeing. I guess a lot of people are glutton for spoilers and they don't give a fuck. Maybe we should make sense, we should briefly outline the premise of the movie.
Okay.
Would you care to do that?
it seems like there is a curse that you get by sleeping with someone who has the curse, and in turn that curse is passed on to you, and the curse is that there is this monster, this thing, it, the titular it, that hunts you down, and it hunts you down at a walking human's pace.
Right.
But it is relentless, and it will
run,
not stop.
It doesn't really slow down. It's just a nice, yeah, measured stroll.
And when it gets to you, it will kill you.
Mm-hmm.
And then once it kills you, it'll move back in line to the last person you slept with, the person who gave it to you,
yeah,
and come after them again.
Yeah.
So you're never truly rid of it.
Yeah.
Unless, I guess, maybe we'll talk about ways you could get rid of it.
Yeah, I think that'd be. And there's like also there's edge cases that I don't. I wish the movie had explored. Like, what if you, like, what if you have the curse and you have sex with six people?
Sure.
Does the curse follow one person?
It seems like it. Yeah.
So you could have sex with a bunch. After you have sex with the first person, you get sex with an infinite number, as long as that person still is holding the curse ball.
I assume so.
That's probably the most reasonable inference.
Yeah. I'm not sure the movie ever says that, right, definitely, but...
I read an interview with David Mitchell where he says, just now that we've kind of got that conceptual thing out of the way. The other thing is, only the person with the curse or in the curse chain can see the monster.
Right.
And the monster manifests as a human. Sometimes they're normal in appearance. Sometimes they're kind of not ever horrific, but like unsettling.
Sure.
Like they might have injuries, or they might be pissing themselves, or they might be naked or in some state of like disrepair. But like,
they're almost always naked. Almost
a lot of
always
them are
naked.
Right.
Yeah.
And then there's I actually, the second time I watched this movie, I realized it's a pretty big flaw that Hugh mistakes the girl in the yellow dress for just a person.
Uh-huh.
Because, like, I at no time would I ever look at a random person if I knew I had the curse and I knew what that looks like and be like, oh, I bet you want to switch places with that girl in the yellow dress, the one with the blank expression with her hands dangling limp at her side that's slowly moving forward as her eyes are locked on me. Like, I think that might be what Quentin Tarantino was talking about.
Okay.
Because when you watch the movie on multiple times, you can kind of see. But I read this interview with the director. This is where I want to kind of bring this together, where he said what he was intending with all of this out of time stuff and things that like are close to our real world but like distinctly different, is he trying to introduce like this dream logic that you are stuck in a situation, it doesn't make sense, and there are like magical and like it feels familiar but the details are off, and like even the final set piece where, you know, it seems stupid to try to line a pool with all these electrical things and throw them in. And, mm-hmm, like, if you know anything about, like, GFI circuitry and, like, this pool would almost certainly have that stuff installed. This shit isn't going to work, but it does make sense in, like, a kind of a dream. Like, you're out of control dream, you know? Like, everyone's had a nightmare, yeah, where it just... It doesn't hold up to the light of day, you know?
Oh, sure.
So I felt like that a lot of these criticisms about it not holding together are dodged by the dream, and I guess you could debate whether inducing a dreamlike feeling or a dream logic, this is kind of like rolling pretty close to David Finch, or I know, is that like, would it be better to just go through and tell the story straight up with no holes, or is it better to have it kind of be this weird, timeless, dreamy kind of quality to it?
Yeah. Especially if you're going at after something thematic, like the confusion of a child turning into an adult and having to deal with sex, right?
Yeah.
Because that's a very unsettling concept, I think, to kids.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I know it certainly was for me in my teenage years. Like, how do you deal with that? You know, everything could seem a little bit dreamy and weird and confusing and not making sense to you.
Yeah, and I even like that, like, the Sean's point about this being about the transition to adulthood. There's, like, this really... There's a lot of beautiful shots in this movie, and one that I really liked is this POV shot of Jay after she slept with Hugh for the first time, and she's like putting her hand out and kind of caressing this wildflower that's growing on the ground, and she's talking about what she imagined being like, you know, being older would be like, and being a teenager and being an adult and how she interacted with her friends. And then, you know, Hugh comes up and chloroforms her, and you get the same POV shot now with her hand kind of limp and, like, crashing into the flower. I thought that was like, well, there's your crossing the threshold right now.
Yeah.
you are now, like, you had the innocence of a child versus the disillusionment of adult. Mm-hmm. I kind of feel like I'm on Quentin's side, that I wish they had spent a little bit of time tightening up the script and making sure it didn't violate any of its own rules, because it is pretty close to being a perfect horror film.
Yeah, no, it's shockingly good, even in its storytelling. Like, its narrative reveals, I think,
mm-hmm.
Are so stylistic. I always felt in this movie that I was about 5 minutes behind the script,
mm-hmm.
but never that I wasn't going to get caught up
right.
by the time I needed to be. Like, there's a scene where she has gotten into a car wreck. She's mm-hmm. been brought to the hospital, and then suddenly she's sleeping with the more sexually attractive of the two males in this movie.
Right, right.
And you're kind of left wondering, what the is he raping her? Like, what is going on mm-hmm. here? How did this come to be? And by the time the scene is over, you've got some assumptions in your head
right.
that, oh, they must have talked about this.
She's stuck in this hospital. She knows it's inevitable.
It's coming
that it's
for
gonna
her.
Come.
She's got to get away from it, and he can, so she's passing it on. And by the time the script reveals that, the narrative unfolds, mm-hmm. you have already kind of caught up to it in your own head.
Yeah, but it's funny because I'd read all this feedback, obviously compiling it, and I had already seen the movie, so I didn't fear any spoilers. So I had this, like, some of Sean's analysis in the back of my mind, and when at first I thought that character, who reminds me a lot of the heroin addict from Fear the Walking Dead,
yeah.
I thought it's like, oh man, this guy is like a really like stand up dude.
Reminds me of the older teen from Camp Nowhere.
Because he's like, he's like, oh yeah, we'll just, you know, like there's this one scene where Jay runs off the first time the it attacks her, and she's at a park, and like all of her friends are trying to comfort her, and this guy who's the boy next door rolls up in his car and like asks the situation, and like he gets a whole bunch of like nonsense answers, and he's like, okay, and he starts to walk away, and you're like okay, this guy's just boning out, but he's getting his car because like, fuck yeah, let's take this serious.
Yeah,
but it's recontextualized, like when, and like it seems noble, like, well, I'll take on this curse and I'll be the runner while you're recuperating in the hospital. But then there's this later scene where he's kind of like, yeah, something happened. But it made it seem like he was taking advantage of her emotionally
yeah.
vulnerable state in
yeah.
his mind. And it kind of like, I don't know how I feel about that guy now. Because he clearly didn't take the curse seriously at all.
Right, right. He knew something happened, but not what she says.
Right.
Yeah. And you're right. I think he is perhaps taking advantage of that situation.
Yeah.
But it's... it's also complicated and weird, too,
it's,
because they
yeah.
apparently boned in high school, so I don't even know what their actual relationship is
did
here.
Did they? Did
yeah,
you get that?
That's what they said, yeah.
What, who did they say?
Jay and long-haired dude.
Had said that that's not the first time they'd had sex?
Yeah. So, I don't know what their relationship is. It's weird.
There's also a lot of interesting things about intimacy. Like, you know, the sex that Jay has with Hugh seems like very passionate, intimate. But it's, you also know that Hugh is killing her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, if she, unless she's willing to kill an innocent person, that he's killing her. And that, like, makes that a lot darker.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, her sex with, like you said, the long-haired attractive guy. Pretty hot for hospital bed sex.
Yeah.
And you contrast that to like the way she like essentially administers the curse to the nerdy kid who is like, you know, pining for her through the whole movie, and how she does the guys with how she treats the guys with the boat.
Oh yeah.
Which that's other like really what the fuck.
That's
moment.
One of those like 5 minute rewind moments that I had too. Like I
yeah.
guess she swam out there and fucked those guys, right?
Right. Right.
Or at least one of them.
Right.
That was weird. You know what's also super hot?
What?
The mess that is this female friend of theirs. Because holy shit.
Yeah.
This girl is just a train wreck of a human being at
yeah.
this point.
Yeah, yeah. And it's funny because, like, you're talking about how this movie is just really brisk and efficient in storytelling. And I found that about the same thing with the friend group. Like,
yeah.
They immediately came across as like teenage close friends, and just the way they interacted, and I mm-hmm. like the fact it's mixed boy girl, but they're still farting, and you know,
one of them,
yeah, the hot mess girl is uh-huh. the one that's quoting T.S. Eliot poems, and
yep.
I yeah, Yeah, no, I liked almost all of the people.
And the economy of storytelling, the economy of character building there is so good because we immediately get a sense of everyone's role in that group.
Right. And there's no, the other thing is like, you also get to know about the adults and their family and where they stand, but you never meet.
No.
Like, you might see her mom in one scene and you might see her in the background, but this is all about the kids being front and center. And I thought that was really, really cool.
Yeah.
So his third point was another meta commentary that Sean had, is that the film can serve as a commentary and almost spoof on the classic slasher films like Halloween and Friday the 13th, in which teens have sex and end up being killed by an unstoppable force, but the virgins always survive. This is a slasher film where having sex will make you a victim, but you can get rid of it by having more sex. By becoming an accomplice and passing on to another partner, you can spare your life for the time being. Yeah, it is an inversion, because I remember when I was watching the first act for the first time, I thought, this is like literally straight up The Cabin blueprint.
Yeah.
Like slutty kids are going to get killed and the chaste and pure are going to not. And
you've got the lumbering evil coming after you.
Yep.
You know, it's slow, but it's relentless and it will get you.
Right. Right. But this, it's like the twist that I enjoy is it adds intention. Right? Like, you have to knowingly inflict this on another human being to spare yourself.
Yeah.
And it's also kind of a temporary respite, too, because you can't ever really let your guard down the rest of your life.
Yeah.
I mean, you could, but it'd be at your peril.
No, I mean, it's a weird kind of conflict of strategies here as far as avoidance goes, because let's say, okay, you give it to the next person. Well, your best bet is to get as far away as possible from them, right? Because you don't want them to do something stupid and get killed and then the thing comes at you and you're right next door. That would be stupid. But at the same time, you by going really far away from this person, you will not know what's happening to them. So you never know if it has killed them and might be coming after you now.
Yeah.
So what do you do in that scenario? Because they wrestle with that a little bit, you know. Is it Josh? Or I don't remember the first guy's name, the guy who sleeps with Jay
Hugh.
And gives it to her. Hugh.
Paul. So Hugh is the guy.
He had two names in the movie. I think his fake name might have been Josh.
Oh, man. I think his fake name was Hugh. If his real name is Josh. Yeah. Because Hugh is the one that is the first name I wrote down. Paul is the nerdy guy.
Yep.
Which I also like the little moments about, you know, like, Paul asked if he can, like when he first hears that Jay has been infected and he said she has experience, like, he pipes and say, hey, I can come over. I can sleep over and keep you company. And, like, all the women simultaneously say no.
Yeah.
I don't think I wrote down. Oh, it's Greg. Greg is the handsome guy.
Greg?
Okay. Yeah. I think
the,
that's.
With the hair.
Yeah.
The crazy Greg, flowing hair
Greg,
guy.
The handsome guy with the hair. Anyway, what were you saying?
And like the slippers or something. I don't know. He's wearing some funky clothes this, but
yeah, he's owning it.
Yeah, I was just saying they kind of wrestle with the strategy here a little bit too, which is kind of immediately where my mind goes. Like, okay, you're saddled with this curse. What do you do with it? What is your best bet? And I was thinking, you know, I bet there's a solution in just a day-to-day routine that could almost guarantee that you stay out of the path of this evil. Let's say you live in a town and you work in a town 40 to 50 miles away.
Right.
At like a 12-minute mile, which is pretty fast for that fucking monster.
Right.
That monster's not going 12 miles every 12 minutes.
Right.
That puts you to where you could spend 8 hours at work. This thing would be lumbering toward you the entire 8 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And it would not reach you before you were on your way back home.
Right.
So
a long commute could save you.
Right. A long commute. And you could just live your life that way, going from home to work, to work.
Well, there's a lot of, I mean, do we want to just go there? Talk about like.
Yeah, let's talk about the strategies for beating this fucking evil.
Because the thing is it does feel like it has, well, I think it's established that it has a physical presence because they throw, I guess you got to depend whether this is dream logic or not, but they throw a sheet over it and it has a humanoid form.
And you can shoot it with a gun.
You can shoot it with a gun.
It can throw you across the room.
Physical barriers.
Yep. Doors.
Slow it down at least. And my thought is like how, and it does seem like it's superhumanly strong.
Yes.
But not like Superman strong. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I wonder what the limits are that. Like, if you would lock yourself in a steel box every night that had, like a steel room that had a front and rear exit, and you had, you know, a way to determine which exit it was waiting for you at, could you just exit the other side, or could it, like, eventually batter down your defenses? I wasn't clear about that. The other... You know, the other problem I guess I have is, could you, like, put a radio collar on it?
Okay, yeah.
Because it's smart, but I don't know what the limits of its intelligence are. Like, it knows how to, like, break windows and climb over obstacles, and it can try to batter things down, but I don't know, like, because the ultimate solution is to be, like, to fucking tag it and just keep tabs on it.
Yeah.
I also don't, like, I wonder... Is it, like, if you, like, how, when they say it's smart, if you, like, had this, if you had this thing where, like, you had a commute, like, an hour commute in your car, and you drove across town, worked, and then you drove back home, after a couple of days of that, would it get smart enough that's like, I'm going to just sit at one location or the other?
Right. Does it have to lumber toward you?
Can it take public transportation?
Sure.
Can it get on a plane?
That'd be real awkward. You go to sit in an empty seat and you find out,
right,
I'm sitting like 6 inches above the seat. What's happening here?
What feels like flabby old woman thighs. What's going on? I don't understand.
I've got the ultimate solution.
Yeah.
Here, so
fucking astronaut before they go on the International Space Station. They're going to be up there for 18 months and like, good.
That's pretty good. You get to sleep easy for 18 months.
Yeah.
I guess you're just watching the NASA feed to make sure like and the also, space station's
does
still
it,
there.
Like, would the, on the ground, would it like track the space station? Like it would start walking at the space station,
the
then it would orbit, because the thing orbits crazy fast.
Yeah, there's no way you
so
keep
it just
up
sits
with it.
There and like walks towards the horizon, and it walks backwards, and it's like every couple hours it just ping pongs on its weird, you know.
That's a good solution to buy you time. I think the ultimate solution though is to just go out and find a wild dog and fuck it. Because think about it, like, a dog is not going to get snuck up on.
Right.
By an evil entity, right? It's going to bug out the first time it sees anything weird happening. It's going to fuck all sorts of other wild animals, and it's going to pass it on, and there are going to be generations and generations of animals with this curse, but it'll never come back to humans.
But I don't... Are dogs... Because I'm thinking, like, yeah, you could fuck a dog. You could essentially rape a dog.
Right.
But, like, are dogs... Don't they only get in the heat, like, once a year? So, like, unless you did that during the time where they're running around the neighborhood catting or dogging it up, like...
Yeah. You avoid it for whatever the heat season is, and then you go to town on a dog, and then the dog goes to town on everything. Everything within sight.
I think you need to fuck a bonobo, because they're like humans. They're like ready...
What the fuck are those?
They're the apes that are close... not closest genetic, but closest in the way... Like, I think they're the only primate other than us that actually is in heat all the time, or is down the fuck. They're always DTF.
I'm looking for 24/7.
So you go to a colony of bonobos, wherever bonobos colonize, and you fuck a bonobo, and then you just let, like, good luck. Massacring, like, successive tribes of bonobos.
Yeah.
Or bonobos? Maybe they're bonobos. I just realized I don't think I've ever heard that thing pronounced.
I didn't even know what it was, so I couldn't tell you. maybe a cat would work, too.
Do you think this thing shows up in infrared?
Oh, good question.
Let me ask you, because there's a rumored sequel.
It has to be emitting, I mean, as something that has mass, clearly, or energy, one of the two. It would have to be emitting some kind of, like, radiation or something, yeah?
But it's also...
It has a physical presence, like you said.
The definition of supernatural, because the way it attracts its victims...
Well, it gives off no visible light. That we know for sure.
It gives off no visible... No visible light.
It doesn't reflect any visible light either.
I also thought it was interesting when... And maybe this is because the limits of the budget, but, like, you couldn't really see it move through water. I thought that was going to be the dead giveaway, that you could track it by
like
the
whole.
Like the old Hollow Man. Like you could see it, or like it would get at when it got out of the pool, it would be like have a shimmer, a sheen. That's the thing. Like, with it being a supernatural entity, I don't like supernatural just means beyond our present understanding. If you studied it enough, would you eventually crack that code? Or I don't know. That's why I'm like, I don't know if this movie needs a sequel. No, I know it doesn't need a sequel. I'm not sure if a sequel should be made. Mm-hmm. I know that there's interviews where he's like, I would be willing to make a sequel, and I think it would be like essentially Jay and Paul trying to track through the to try to find like who originated the curse or how long it's been going on. And
sure,
like I think that would be an interesting way to take it. The other interesting way would be like on a very mature adult version of Home Alone, where they try to through observation and scientific method figure out empirically this thing's weakness and then take it down.
And at the end, she just fucks a dog. She goes out to a tribe of bonobos and.
Well, I wonder if what, I wonder if the other thing's like what ends the curse? Like if you die of natural causes, like if you can evade this thing for the rest of your life and die of a natural death or not at the creature's hands, is that end the curse or is it just roll back on the person?
It's a good question.
What happens when the curse chain is broken?
Because then,
like someone steps in front of a bus and gets killed, or like if they commit suicide, and now like you got a chain of 30 active people and they're 15, does that break it or?
Yeah, could you go into a hospital and fuck somebody on life support or something and then pull the plug?
Right.
Like, would that work? I don't know. I don't know.
I mean, that's the other thing is, like, there doesn't seem there's any solutions to passing it on that are ethically sound.
No, fuck no.
Like, you're
except maybe fucking a dog, because the dog wants it.
I mean, wow. You know, that's fraught. I'm not even going to touch that. I'm going to let you deal with that. I don't know, but there's a lot of weird... I also noticed the second time going through, there's a lot of interesting things about bugs. Like, she sees an ant on her arm, and she just kind of observes it, and then just kind of nonchalantly submerges her arm in the pool, and the ant presumably drowns. And she doesn't give it any thought. Mm-hmm. And then later, when they're walking around the neighborhood, I notice that, like, the hot mess girl that you're always referring to, is she's, like, conscientiously stomping and then... I presume bugs. She's walking and like every so often she like kind of stomps and like puts the cigarette out motion, and I assume that's bugs. I'm like, are they trying to make a statement here that this is the way that it sees humans, that it's just like, you know, it's not angry or does it, it's just like this is like, you know, but it's like no one's job, I mean, unless you like work for Orkin, no one's job is to go around and kill insects. Like, but it's
It makes me wonder how it came to be, how it got started, like what its goal really is.
Right.
I don't know that the movie cares about any of that.
Did you think it was clunky? Him chloroforming her and tying her to the wheelchair, and then just delivering 5 minutes of exposition.
Yes, that was one of the problems I had, because it had done such good storytelling up to that point.
Yeah.
And maybe it had only
done
really
good story.
I don't
know how
you
show or don't tell all that stuff, because
I wish they had tried to find a way to do it.
It's kind of like that's the Morpheus scene where he sits in a red chair and like you're just going to like, if this movie is going to be comprehensible, you're going to have to deal. And I the first time I watched it, it didn't seem clunky because I was desperate for information at that point.
Okay.
Like I'm like the cold open or the intro scene where the girl's running down the street and the slip and the red heels, and then she's followed and she calls her father and she gets like and then the Hugh thing, like I was really like wanting to know what the hell was going on.
Yeah.
So like, but the second time I'm thinking like, man, this is really a lot of dense rules explanations. It's like before you sit down to play a board game, you got to spend 20 minutes being told how to play it, or it's a shit show. So
yeah, and I don't have a good solution for how to do that without just exposition.
There's a lot of other weird stuff. Like there's this little redhead kid that is the peeping Tom. Now that might just be to explain the red ball jump scare.
Okay,
but she also steals his bike and then drives across what half the town. And at the end of the movie, we see the kid kind of pulling up to her house and like with the bike. Like I'm not sure what's going on at the little redhead creep. If that's something intentional, because he keeps popping up.
He does keep popping up. I guess he's probably curious about this whole sex thing. Yeah, he's just starting to feel the effects of it.
Yeah,
the effects of his hormones and puberty and all that.
Yeah,
so he's always trying to peep on her when she's in the pool or whatever.
Yeah, it's a pretty extreme case of peeping. You're creeping on someone's house and like literally like looking in their bathroom windows. Like,
yeah, but I'm going with the idea.
There's looking at Victoria's Secret catalogs, and then there's Peeping Tom.
Yeah,
like one's a crime and one's not, kid.
Yeah, I'm just trying to go thematically with this idea.
Yeah.
It seems like he might be there as like a. an even younger representation than Jay.
I also, you know, the other thing I really like, speaking of like the visual storytelling, is like they have this like they do it twice, like this 15-second drive to the bad part of town. And I thought that was really effective to show like their safe, nice suburbs and like how, because I've lived in a lot of towns. Hell, I'm living in a town right now that has that kind of decay, mm-hmm. where like it's not like, oh, you cross the street and it's like, oh, you're on the bad side of tracks. It's like, oh, here's a shingle that's loose. Oh, here's a broken window. Oh, here's a house that's boarded up. Oh, this is just a fucking shooting gallery.
Yeah.
Like, I really liked how they kind of showed that in these small towns, how you can just, you know, drive a little bit and everything just gets progressively worse until it hits rock bottom. Mm-hmm. And that's where Hugh is shacking up. There's another scene where I thought was interesting where she's like stacking green blades of grass on her thigh.
Yeah. What did you make of that scene?
I felt like it was, I thought it was like to go with Sean's, fallout from being sexually assaulted or abused, mm-hmm. that it was like a metaphor for self-harm.
That's what I thought so.
I people cutting themselves, yep. mm-hmm. like distracted, that was supposed to be like an allusion to that, because otherwise it doesn't really make sense and fit in anything.
Yeah.
Also in that same scene, their establishing shot of driving to Greg's grandpa's cabin, I thought was super gorgeous, where they're like, again, it's another way where they're telling a story. You're on the highway, then you're on like a byway, and then you're on a dirt road, and then you're on this like just leaf strewn, like looks like the entrance to the Batcave from the old Keaton films. And it's just gorgeous and reminded me a lot of like Kubrick's early establishing work in The Shining. The like, yeah, this is in the middle of nowhere, y'all.
I actually kept getting like American Beauty vibes. Mm-hmm. Especially from that opening stuff, where it's a shot just straight down this suburban street.
Yeah.
Felt very American Beauty to me. And I don't know, that's a compliment in my mind.
Yeah, I know. What do you think about the special effects of the film?
I thought they were good. Good to passable.
Some of the stuff at the lake house, like where the creature like grabbed her hair and was throwing people around invisible, was like a little shaky.
Huh, okay.
But it's also a low budget film.
Yeah, it's $2 million
for
this entire thing. It ends up making like 20 plus.
That's the crazy thing, is how cheap this film was, but yet how good it looks.
Yeah.
And there are like a lot of really cool scenes, like, which I'm sure is just a practical effect. Like when they killed the monster, well, they didn't really kill it, but when they seemingly killed it in the pool, and there's just like clouds of red blood expanding through the pool. I thought that was like, mm-hmm. super good looking, and just like the quality of the film itself, and there's no like sweeping vistas, this isn't like Westworld or anything, but like they're shooting suburban America and rural America, and it makes it look really good.
Yeah. I want to know what you thought at the end, if you are all out of stuff to talk about.
Like what do you mean?
Like the ending where,
okay.
you know, she sleeps with Paul and they're kind of walking down the street hand in hand.
I will let Sean lead the way.
Okay.
Here's my interpretation of the ending. As Jay and Paul are walking down the sidewalk, there's a cut from them walking toward the camera. Then it cuts to an angle behind them and then back again to the original shot from in front of them. And we see someone out of focus slowly walking towards them. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure that's it. But here's the thing, if you look closely at the person following them at the end, it resembles Paul, and it's wearing a jacket that looks identical to the one he is wearing. I believe its current form is Paul, and I think it's noteworthy for this reason. Paul's wanted to sleep with Jay for a long time now, before and after she contracted it, and in doing so, he has killed himself. He knows she's cursed, he has seen the results of what it does, and he's willing to be cursed by this thing his entire life to sleep with his childhood crush, thereby killing himself. Or it could be some random extra, and I'm reading too much into the film. I don't know what it looking like Paul has to do with that, because it looked like Greg when it went to go murder Greg.
Mm-hmm.
So it looking like Paul while it's stalking Paul did not seem like super shocking to me.
Yeah, I mean, it can look like anything. I'm certain that at times the theme required it to look like something particular. I didn't pick up on much of that. But I do think, I don't know, I kind of took the end as something a little more upbeat than that, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Paul is pining after Jay throughout this entire movie, and I don't, like, I understand that a good chunk of that is probably sexual, right?
Mm-hmm. They're teenagers.
And I don't get a great sense of, like, I guess if I was going to say this movie had one flaw is I don't quite understand Paul and Jay and Paul's lust for Jay or genuine love for Jay. I don't know what it is exactly. Mm-hmm. When I try to interpret it into this movie, I assume that Paul has genuine feelings for Jay and that over the course of this movie, Jay has seen how Paul has moved to protect her and help her with this horrible thing that she's been cursed with.
Yeah.
And that with them walking hand in hand away from this thing at the end is them saying, we're going to deal with this together.
I agree.
And coming to some kind of true, like, actual respectful relationship at the end, as opposed to Greg, who just wants to fuck her.
Yeah.
And doesn't believe in any of the cursed stuff. Like,
right.
I think Jay and Paul have a more genuine and, what's the term for not parasitic?
Codependent.
Just mutually beneficial kind of thing here, right?
Yeah.
Like, they both are happy with the situation with the bad situation that they've been given here.
See, I feel like it is, I don't know, because to me, Paul seems like he has put himself into the friend zone, which I find an annoying term because it makes it seem like the person that's in the friend zone, it's like somehow the woman's fault that they got there. When reality, mm-hmm. they put themselves in that situation, they stay in that situation, and the only one that's tormenting themselves really is themselves. Mm-hmm. The only way... Yeah. So, like, he has, I think, expressed that he's attracted to her a couple of times, and she's rebuffed him, and he says, okay, well, we can still be friends if he's carrying a torch for her. I think it's pretty clear that she doesn't feel that way towards him, and at the end... I thought it was pretty dark because they both seem like just very traumatized. They look tired. They look worn. Yes, they're holding hands. But I don't know how comfortable she is with that. Like he's certainly not got the relationship that he wants with this woman. And she is stuck in this situation because, like, I think that's the flaw in Hugh's plan is, like, if you fuck a person and just peace out and never keep, like, you don't know how much slack you've got. You don't know how,
right.
like, you yeah. know, it seems like the logical thing to do would be to keep tabs on the person you pass it to try to make sure, like, how much layers of armor do you got between you and it.
So you think Jay is just using him to get a temporary relief from the curse? Because they...
I think, like, yeah, by the time...
Sleeping with him and walking hand in hand down the street doesn't say that she doesn't want Paul... in her life. Like,
I mean, yeah, I'm making a read on, like, 15 seconds of acting, but
yeah.
like, I think there's an interesting throughput where Jay becomes increasingly jaded because of her experiences. Like, mm-hmm. she has got this kind of sweet you know, love affair with Hugh that turns terribly wrong, and then after a lot of prodding and talking, she reluctantly agrees to, I guess, resume the sex that she had with Greg. And huh. but it still felt passionate, and then she just that's the thing that blows my mind about the boat scene. She's just this girl that's half naked. She got a cast in her arm. I'm trying to think of, like, how that scene went. She just swims out to this aluminum bass boat where these probably middle aged or older men are out there drinking beer with beer guts, and she just, like, climbs on the boat and's like, "Okay, boys, have at it."
Uh-huh.
Like,
I guess so.
Who is the person that says, sure, uh-huh. sure, lady, this is a perfectly sane thing to do. They're not like, I don't know. And then, like, what happens to those guys?
Yeah.
Like, obviously, they must be killed. But,
maybe.
Like,
can the monster swim?
Yeah, then there's 24/7 boat and lifestyle. Like,
yeah.
maybe not. It's like, hey, man, this is working out for us. We got this.
There you go. Just go fuck Jimmy Buffett. He's on a boat 24/7. The monster will never catch him.
Yeah, or some dude that's on a worldwide tour.
Right.
Like, you know, he's going to have sex
yeah.
with groupies, and groupies going to have sex with, like, yeah, it's like just like...
I would say fuck Mick Jagger, but you'll get worse things from him.
Right, right.
No, so I don't know. I look at her experiences with sex throughout this movie as being the experimentations of a young adult, right?
Yeah.
And you made some bad decisions, and you slept with some people who... you thought really cared about you but didn't. And then at the end she finds Paul, who has been supportive and does care about her. And maybe there's not, like, this fiery passion, but there's more of, like, a supporting, understanding thing there. That's how I read it. But
yeah, but I don't... I mean, I don't... I mean, maybe that's a form of love, but it's not the form of love that you normally... And I don't think it's what Paul would want. And like I said, I just think back to their sex scene and how cold it was. Like, I think he went to go kiss her, and she's like, no. You know, this just... And also, I'm also like, it called to mind, like, what counts as sex?
Yes.
For, like, if he just... literally enters her and does one thrust, is that sex? If she blows him, is that sex? Does one or both have to have an orgasm? Like, I don't want to sound like Bill Clinton-y here, but what is the definition of sex that this thing accepts as, like, genuine sex?
Yeah.
I don't know, but I don't...
The monster.
To me, those two people walking down the street are not two people that are living their best lives or the lives that
living,
they imagine.
They're living the best lives given the circumstances.
Right.
I think.
Right. I mean, that's like, say, like let's say they're fleeing a war-torn country. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, and Paul is her only way out of out of this thing. And she's like, let's say she's a female Jew who's fleeing pre-World War Germany, and Paul is a German who's helping her out of the country. And they're walking hand in hand across the border. Like, is that a romantic situation? Or is she just like, like I said, I'm comfortable with her saying that she's using Paul. Mm-hmm. But Paul is not unaware of the fact that he's being used, and he's not unhappy necessarily with the fact that he's being used.
Okay.
Can romance bloom there? Maybe we'll see that in the sequel. But I don't think they were authentically in love.
Okay, we interpreted it differently.
That's the other thing is, like, you know, when you have these situations where, like, super extreme, like, you know, is that genuine in love? Like, I don't know. Like, I was just thinking, like, because when you first started this talk, I was like, Are teenagers, it's weird because, like, I remember being a teenager. I remember being in love. As a 40-year-old man, I look back at that and laugh at, like, how ridiculous it all was. But it absolutely felt real. And I had also, like, I would even bristle if 41-year-old me would come tutting through my memories, like, well, that wasn't real love. That wasn't real love. You idiot. You didn't know any better. Like,
right.
It might have been puppy love, but it did still feel real. And, you know, what the fuck is love except for the thing you feel in your chest? So, yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. I'm surprised by your reaction, but what the hell? That's acting. That's direction. I had a question about, like, what happened with her fucking the boaters. There's also a scene where the pool that she swam in the beginning is caved in, and I wondered what that was supposed to, because I don't remember the thing attacking the pool. And I wonder if, like, maybe the scene, like, was that cut? Like, was that, there's a scene cut where the thing rampaged through the pool to get at her or something?
I don't know.
Yeah, no. I did think, like, because when we're talking about avoidance, if your plan, like, because if the thing is smart, and that's what Hugh says, I doubt that you could just commute back and forth across town and live a normal life, and that would be enough. Like, to me, I was thinking how hard it would be to live a normal life with this curse, because...
Sure. Yeah.
Even if we talked about, even if you inflict it on someone and then peace out, like, you can't ever be sure, and, like... If you want to, like, take lavish trips to, like, Indonesia, like, that costs a lot of money, and you can't really hold down a job, and it just seemed like the way they depicted Hugh as almost living like a homeless person is accurate, how miserable that life would be.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, I'm actually kind of shocked that there hasn't been sequels made, like, because it does seem like you could have Jay trying to figure out where this curse chain goes. You could have, you know, like, I'm thinking of all the things they did with Resident Evil from that concept.
Uh-huh.
Like, you also, like, I could get down for, like, a year in the life of Jay. Like, how is she living now with this curse and evading the monster? Like, maybe it could be a trilogy. Like, this is the beginning. Second one is the year in the life and just, like, the practical effects of avoiding. And three is where they get scientific and ghost bust its ass. But I'm kind of shocked. Is like, I know the movie didn't make tons of bank. It made it made $40-some million off a $2 million budget. So, yeah, that's pretty good. But, like, with the horror market seeming to have a resurgence in the last 5 years, I'm really shocked that they haven't, like, pumped this out for sequels.
Could you capture it? Could you
confine it? Yeah, you lure it into You lure it into the steel box.
Yeah, lure it in the steel box, and then take the steel box and like drop it in a volcano or something.
And then it becomes an SCP entry, you know?
Or bury it.
Yeah,
or, like, drop it into a massive hole and just cover it with.
Yeah, and then back up, pour a couple dozen yards of concrete over it, and now what are you going to do, you fuck?
Yeah, just cover,
drop
dump
it,
a whole truck of concrete on it.
Drop it
wait
in
for
one
it
of
to dry.
The oceanic trenches or...
I think you could do it.
Yeah.
There are ways around this.
Yeah. And again, I don't know what kind of locomotion this thing can do. Although, if anything, it's a faster swimmer than it is a walker.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, what if you just put an ocean between you? Like, would it just walk into water and just never get out? Or, I don't know. Yeah. That's the thing that's fun about this movie. It's a really well-made movie, but it's also fun to kind of think about and, like, you know, what would you do? Mm-hmm. And, you know, kind of like test your own morals and stuff. What would you... Yeah. Do you think you try, like, yeah, apparently you just fuck a dog.
Yeah, I'd fuck a dog. I'd fuck
a
wild
dog. You'd find
a dog,
you'd hold your nose, you'd do, like, the pig fucking in season one, episode one of
Black Mirror,
and just, like, that's it.
Yeah, and I'd be free forever. I think legitimately I could not, I absolutely could not pass it on to someone.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things, like, what would you do on D-Day kind of scenarios? Like, it's easy to talk to big talk until the fucking scary monster's running after you, drooling and pissing,
but I mean, the calculus the there, what, your calculation there is, like, I'm going to give it to this person, and then, okay, so you give it to them, you tell them, and you show them, like he did, Hugh does in this movie.
Which, by the way, any step in that, if he gets caught, like, he's in prison, and then the things is going to get him.
Absolutely,
like, if he's detained by the cops, you're fucked, because
But the problem here, and the main, like, the reason that this would not be a solution to the problem, is just fucking somebody else, is because it comes back to you eventually.
Right.
So, like, even
to me, you are a master of your own destiny if you've got this curse.
And the only thing you're doing by giving it to someone else is inflicting that upon them. You're not buying yourself anything.
Yeah.
Because you can never sleep easy. What if it kills them and comes back after you?
Here's the problem.
Is no relief.
You give up your sex life.
You do, yeah.
Which is pretty
brutal.
Except
with dogs.
Except. Well, I mean, like, I guess if you, like, this is kind of, you know, people with... even fatal sexually potentially fatal at this point, sexually transmitted diseases get into long-term relationships with people that don't have them, and they weigh the risks and balances. And
I
guess, could you have a normal enough life that you can engage in that kind of emotional relationship to get to the point where you say, hey, I mean, how do you break that? Like, I've got you can't see it. I know I act nervous and weird, and I have to sit to see the view all exits. And here's why: because all this has happened. Like, I don't know. Maybe there's an ethical way to do the Hugh thing where you just tell them, and
I suppose. Yeah,
but because I feel like you're right. Like, if you pass it on, you no longer have the control.
Also, you're just being a dick. Like,
you're just being a dick,
still in danger.
You're still in danger, and you're even worse. You're in uncertain danger. So you could actually relax and let your guard down, whereas if you know the thing is stalking you, then it keeps you sharp. I agree.
Yeah.
Great, great movie suggestion, Sean. If you want to hear Cecily and I's thoughts, I will link the cinematic spectacular that we recorded last October if you want a female perspective on it. We talk about a lot of other cool, scary movies, too. That'll be in the show notes. But thanks again, Sean, for commissioning this podcast. It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun to talk about. Hope you guys enjoyed it. If you'd like to commission your podcast, your very own podcast, you are currently out of luck because we are still catching up on our queue, plugging away, trying to get stuff done. We'll probably have some news fairly soon about what we're going to do with the commissions going forward. But we're not ready. We haven't quite finalized our plan. So you will be the first to know if you listen to the commission podcasts when it's reopened, or if it's reopened, and if it's reopened, what kind of flaming hoops have been installed to dissuade you from filling our queue full of 35 films that we're a year and a half behind on. Check that out at just keep watching the social media and keep listening to the commission podcast. It'll all be revealed in time. Thanks for listening to this one. I'm Aaron.
Yeah, I'm Jim.
I'll see you later.